Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to This Week in the Hawks, Episode 3. It's Friday, the 13th of January, 2017. And we're still without any intro music. And it's not that I haven't tried. I decided it'd be a great idea to make something really stupid. So I think last week I tried the idea of like doing something stupid and singing an intro myself, which I may or may not include that here. If I do, you'll hear it now.
This Week in the Hawks.
Oh boy, yeah. So that wasn't, as you can imagine, that was quickly yanked by myself. So, oh well, it just means that you're just going to be taken a little bit aback in the first 5 seconds of this pod. But anyways, we're not here to talk about intro music. We're here to talk about Hawks basketball. It was a pretty light week for the Hawks in many ways. They only played 2 games, which we'll cover in a bit, against the Mavericks and the Nets, finishing off that road trip. But first, get into some of the news from the Hawks during the week. And the big news, of course, is that Paul Millsap has been taken off the trade market in a surprising turn of events. Woj tweeting on Monday that Wes Wilcox, Hawks GM, started informing teams today that Paul Millsap is no longer on the trade market. And this was followed up by Chris Vivlemore of the AJC. I'm just going to read you a little bit of what he said in his report informing that the Hawks have taken Millsap off the trade. So let's begin here. The Hawks took, quote, a long and hard look, end quote, at trading Millsap, but ultimately decide he is too valuable to the franchise and they want to keep him, according to one familiar person with the change of the decision. The new mandate, and this is the big part here, the new mandate may have come from a Hawks ownership, Vivlemore writes. So that's very interesting. Chris Willis, of Petrie Hoops, followed up on Twitter and tweeted, begs the question, how many other times has ownership been involved in basketball decisions since July 1st? And it really does make you think how much Wes Wilcox and Coach Bud, and also president of basketball operations, Budenholzer as well, how much did they have a say in this ultimately? And in any other, the free agent decisions, the decision to let Al Horford leave, the decision to sign Dwight, a big name free agent signing. So it makes you think, and it just changes that perspective completely. Because now instead of wondering, well, why didn't Wes Wilcox make this move before Millsap, in theory, left? But now we have this new information. Well, again, it's all this is not confirmed, but I think it's very safe to assume that ownership has stepped in. And the reason I believe that ownership has actually got involved in here is because the way Millsap, Vivlemore wrote another story about how Paul Millsap isn't angry about the Hawks looking at trades and such, and the quotes in that kind of, they seemed very definitive in the way that Millsap, like in the sense that it was definitely over. Millsap believed it was definitely over. And of course, something that would lead from would be ownership coming in and saying, he is not being traded, end of. That would be very definitive, and that's what it kind of sounds like Millsap is getting across. Let me read some quotes. All right, quote Millsap. It means a lot. So let's just go over the whole thing in general. It means a lot, said Millsap. But knowing the basketball and knowing the bigness of it, you knew that they were looking at. You knew what they were trying to get. Pretty much seeing what was out there. I'm not mad for that because that's business. I'm valuable to them. It means a lot. I think they knew where I stood all along. It means a lot to me, this organization, this community. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be playing for this organization. I meant what I said. And when he said that his heart was in Atlanta. And just one more quote. It's what I wanted all along. It's a sigh of relief to know that nothing is going to happen. I can focus on basketball, focus on getting this team to the playoffs and hopefully a championship. End quote. quotes. So yeah, that kind of to me seems very definitive, which normally isn't the case with the free agents to be in, who are getting involved in trade rumors. And normally these go up, you're kind of always in talks until the deadline. And I think back to Josh Smith a few years ago in 2013. Ultimately, he was never traded, but his name never stopped coming up. And to me, it just seems like that, ownership has definitely stepped in here. And I can understand why. The Hawks have trouble selling out the arena as it is, their home games. Could you imagine how their attendance would be if this team was going through a rebuild, or like a full-scale rebuild kind of here? It wouldn't be great. Well, obviously it wouldn't be great for ownership because you're not getting those ticket sales. So they kind of want the Hawks to be competitive, to at least kind of draw that crowd in, which I can understand in that sense. But at the end of the day, you want to do what's best for the team in the long term. And I just think with ownership kind of stepping in here and just, I think they're thinking of the ticket sales and that kind of thing. It seems that they're kind of willing to settle for mediocrity rather than either bottom out or go all in, and keeping up this streak of making the playoffs, which I think is important to the franchise and to the fans, because it's the second longest streak in the NBA, and obviously behind the Spurs, who've made the playoffs for the last 1,000 years. So I think that's something that means a lot to the franchise. They don't want to blow that as such. I think it's a mistake, though. I'd finally gotten around the idea of gone comfortable with the idea. Okay, there's some decent packages out there for Millsap, I'm sure. Some team is going to want to sign him up here. They'll overpay to get him because he's a damn good player. But then to take this new direction, it doesn't really make sense to me. And maybe they just thought Al Horford wasn't going to leave. And maybe that's why they thought, okay, we can lowball him a little bit. And, he'll still give us, he might take it, but he'll give us that chance. But then, of course, he left. Al Horford left for Boston, obviously, in the last summer. And he'd just turned 30. And a 5-year deal would have ran him at the max until 35. I don't understand what's different here about Millsap. Are the Hawks really going to want to pay Millsap for 4 or 5 years at the max until he's 36 or 37? That's my worry. I just don't see them doing that. But I wouldn't have seen the front office doing that, but maybe the ownership has decided, we lost Al Horford last year. That's not happening again. We're going to pay up this time. Maybe that's the case. Maybe the Hawks will keep Millsap in the summer. It's really hard to say. But yeah, just a strange, strange situation. I imagine you'll hear Millsap crop up in some trade talks before the trade deadline. But I don't think there'll be anything too concrete in those unless the Hawks literally get an offer they cannot refuse. It seems like that Millsap is going to be staying with the Hawks at least until the summer. So we shall see. We shall see. It's going to be interesting. I think it's a mistake, but when ownership is involved, they obviously have more than basketball on their minds. I think obviously money plays into it. The other big news from this week was that Mike Dunleavy, part of that Kyle Korver trade, had initially decided not to show up. According to reports that he wasn't interested in joining the Hawks. They just wanted to buy out to go to a playoff team. Eventually, things kind of U-turned. It took a phone call from Bud to apparently change his mind. Woj tweeting here, once Dunleavy was convinced that Budenholzer wanted him, there was no more discussion of buyout. Significant respect between them. Which I kind of thought would be the case. I thought Budenholzer may have a use for Dunleavy. Budenholzer commenting how he liked and respected Dunleavy's game. I think that's fair, but it seemed a little rash to think that you'd be immediately moved on after seeing those quotes. And then Dunleavy, then an article written by Chris Vivlamore on Thursday, kind of talked about how the buyout reports were inaccurate, going to read a few quotes here from Dunleavy. I think when you get traded, especially someone like myself with three kids, a wife, a family, a lot of stuff going on, it takes some time to get things turned around and get down here. I'm allowed a certain amount of time to do that, which I did. I got here in plenty of time of the 72 hours. All things stop when you get traded. You need to make sure your family's good. Obviously, there were reports with the three-team trade and getting moved on. You have to make sure you're going to be kept before you come. That's kind of what happened. I'm here now and ready to get rolling. And that makes sense. End quote after rolling. And that makes sense. I remember, if you remember, it was a 2015 where Luke Ridnour got traded like six times. Not really, like four or five times in a matter of days. Could you imagine if he had turned up to each location every time he was traded? So I get that, and I get it in that sense. Just a few more quotes from Dunleavy about actually playing. Quote, I fit in as far as the way I play. I move, cut, shoot, pass. That's the way this team is. It's structured. It's not a matter of what you're going to do for me now or how I'm going to fit in. It didn't take much explaining. End quote from Dunleavy. And just a little one from Paul Millsap. Quote, he's a veteran. He's a fast learner. He knows our offense pretty well. It's going to be a good addition. End quote. So, and that makes sense. You know, all that kind of makes sense. That's something I can believe. I think he will. I think he does have a place here on this team. I think the thing that people forget is that he's able to shoot the three-pointer at a very high percentage. He has shot the three-pointer, you know, 39% last season and 41% before that. If you look at what Korver was shooting last year and this season, that's around the same. You know, Korver's hovering around 41, 40% from three last year and this year as well. So the Hawks actually didn't really give up a whole lot to get basically another shooter. So I think Dunleavy does have a place on this team and he'll fit in nicely. I kind of wrote to kind of cover my... I wrote an article this week on on hawkshoop.com. Excuse me. How rude of me. Kind of what the trade, Kyle Korver trade, means for the Hawks. And kind of as a throwaway, not a throwaway line, but just to cover my bases as such, that it may be something like, it may be this trade just might be like Korver just getting moved on for a draft pick as a smart business move. And then nothing else will come of these moves, like any kind of future moves. Which seems to be the case now with Millsaps being told that he's not being traded. So just it really does look like that this one trade was just to take advantage of a very decent deal out there for an expiring contract in Korver. Dunleavy wasn't. I think he was at the game on Tuesday against the Nets. He didn't play. He should be good to go tonight against the Celtics, which we'll get to in a bit. So I'm interested to see how he gets on, as are a lot of folk. I think he can serve a purpose on this team. All right, let's get to the game talk right quick. The Hawks had a light schedule this week. They played two games since we were here last Friday. They played against the Mavericks on Saturday, and then they played the Nets on Tuesday. Let's talk about that Nets game first, since it was the most recent. Let's talk about that Brooklyn game first. The Hawks won 117-97 in Brooklyn. They were led wire to wire for the first time this season, which is nice. But you really got to see why Brooklyn are not a very good team. They take some bad shots, but they make life so difficult for themselves. They put themselves in very difficult situations with late shot clock and just taking bad shots. You have to feel a little bit for, of course, Hawks ex-assistant Kenny Atkinson, who, of course, left the Hawks to take this head coaching role in Brooklyn. And it was so good to see so much respect and love for Kenny. You had, I think, Bazemore and Schroeder hugging him pre-game. And then post-game, there's a great video that the Hawks have on the Twitter and they have on their YouTube channel as well. I'm sure you may have caught it. But just like all the players and the coaches just going up to Kenny afterwards and hugging him and just embracing him again. So that was really cool to see. Just with the game itself, not a whole lot to say. The Hawks led wire to wire, like I said. Kind of another balanced effort this time around. Schroeder scored 19. I think five players scored in double digits. Well, I think. I'm looking at it. I can't. It's more so if I can actually see who. Yeah. So Schroeder scored 19 points. Cephalosha scored 10. Millsap eventually got cooking in the fourth quarter. He made four shots in a row in the fourth. He ended up with 14. Dwight had 14. Humphreys, oh man, Chris Humphreys. Oh, we'll get to him in a second. He had 13. And then Malcolm Delaney had 12. So, yes, that is six players. Congratulations, you idiot. I'm talking to myself, of course. That is six players, not five. He scored in double digits. Schroeder, of course, leading the way was on 17, 19 points, 17 of 14 shooting. 2 of 4 from three. 3 free throws, 10 assists, 0 turnovers. How about that? How about that for a game? Did you ever think Dennis Schroeder with this season would have a 10 assist, 0 turnover game? I sure did not. And I will talk a little bit more about Dennis later. Chris Humphreys. Let's get to this. Chris Humphreys. Holy crap. He was productive early. Just got a lot of good baskets. You know what I mean? Made a jump shot or two. Remember running that fast break. Did you see that fast break? He was galloping like a horse. It was unreal. And for the and one as well. Oh, it was hilarious. But then I also liked how about his defense. You know, the Hawks have adopted the scheme, defensive scheme of kind of trapping and doubling off of pick and rolls. Technical terms, I believe, is blitzed. Blitz the pick and roll. Maybe. Don't quote me on that. And just see him extending that pressure. You know, that really good one in the first quarter where they trapped, I think it was Schroeder and Humphreys that trapped Spencer Dinwiddie, forcing Dinwiddie to call a timeout. But I just like that from Chris. You know, Bud spoke about post game, said he liked his liked that aggression, and that's how I kind of put it as well. That he was aggressive, so that was good to see. Another good to see thing, yes, we're all with that. Was Malcolm Delaney, 12 points, like we mentioned, 5 of 6 shooting from the field, and which were all jumpers. He's money from that mid range. He really is. His percentages don't really reflect the kind of shooter he is. I think a lot of that's just to do with adjusting to the range and adjusting to the travel, the schedule, all these things. So hopefully you'll see Malcolm's percentages shoot up. I believe at the moment they're shooting 39% from the field and I think it's 17% from three. I don't have them in front of me, so admittedly I don't know. I think it's something like that. But he is shooting about 48% from his mid-range. And that is really good. Just to see those shots go in as they did in Europe. Because that's he's been a shooter basically everywhere he's been. He's been a shooter. So it's good to see him actually, for the shots to actually go down. So that was really good to see. 54 bench points. Toss smoked the Nets in that area. And but the one thing from this game, holy crap, if this was against a good team, the Hawks would be paying for this right now, because they missed a ton of free throws against the Nets. They shot 22 of 38. 38 attempts. They missed 16 of those. And it was, you know, it wasn't just Dwight. You know, Dwight didn't have the best game at the free throw line. It's definitely his worst in a while. And then he shot two of eight from the line. But just everyone missed free throws. You know, I think like Bazemore missed two. Millsap missed two. THJ missed two. Delaney missed two. You know, just it all adds up. But it's part of the reason why the Hawks, you know, aren't as good as a free throw shooting team. It's not just Dwight, because Dwight actually stepped up and made his free throws. Okay, not at the same percentage as, like, say, Tim Hardaway. Oh, we're getting close there at that one. As someone like Dennis Schroeder. It's just, yeah, just kind of everyone is missing free throws right now. And that's the problem. Thankfully, it didn't really matter too much in this game. Yeah, not much a whole lot to say about this game. It was kind of your stand. It wasn't really close. You know, I don't think the Hawks ever felt threatened at all by the Nets. The Nets did kind of, one thing I thought was interesting from the Nets, they did kind of, and Brook Lopez did this really well, I have to say. Whatever pick and roll that Lopez was involved in, they made an adjustment at halftime where he kind of did the same thing as Humphreys and the other Hawks bigs have been doing. They've been blitzing the pick and rolls. it really prevented Schroeder from turning the corner at times. You know, he had Schroeder had 10 points in the first quarter and then had 9 for the rest of the game. Now, he didn't shoot like badly again. You know, he shot 50% from the field. But I think Lopez did a great job in that area. And it's funny watching Brook Lopez hit threes. I remember watching his first three-pointer he ever made, because I remember watching this game live. It was insane. It was, I think it was game 4 of the Nets and Bulls 2013, that 3 overtime game where Nate Robinson just explodes. And Lopez, I think it was an offensive rebound, and Lopez is at the three-point line. When he gets the ball, the shot he thinks the shot clock is about to go. So he catches it, quickly turns around, and splashes the three. And that was really cool to see. But now he's taking a lot more these days. And he's making a decent clip. I believe he's the league leader when it comes to actual centers shooting threes, like with the percentages. I think he's at 34%. It's interesting. Dominique wasn't too pleased, because I think Neek is old school and he really loved it when Lopez was in the paint. And that's where he's best at, because Lopez is one of the best. He's such a smooth, he's a smooth operator. That song, I heard it recently and I can't think of the line of how it goes. But he's really smooth in the post. There are a few players like him in the league that can do what he does. So I would like to see them do that a little bit more. But hey, I guess it's good to be versatile these days. So to have that three-point shot, you know, it's not bad. I just wouldn't... Well, it's funny because Nick was saying he didn't really like Lopez shooting threes because it takes away from... you lose a big from rebounding underneath the rim from a missed shot. And that's true. But Brook Lopez doesn't really rebound anyways, even when he was under the rim. He was... Him and like Roy Hibbert, I never understood how they could have such low rebounding numbers for their sheer size. They're both 7 foot plus. So Lopez doesn't really rebound anyways. And sure enough, that was, you can see that in the box score on Tuesday. He grabbed, I think it was 2 rebounds. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about that, Neek. Yeah, not much else to say about that game. But yeah, that game wasn't really, I don't think the Hawks ever really felt threatened in that game against the Nets. But hey, it's their 7th in a row. And then that Hawks counter on there, the Hawks Twitter is looking real nice right now. Let's throw back to the Mavs game on Saturday. The Hawks won this one 97-82 in Dallas to extend their streak to 6 at the time. A couple of things here. Great game from THJ. 22 points, 7 of 13 shooting, 5 of 8 from behind the arc. It was another great game for Hardaway against the Mavs. And then Dennis Schroeder, 20 points on 7 of 15 shooting, 3 of 5 shooting from 3. Then you had Dwight, another 20 rebound game, 15 points, 20 rebounds in 31 minutes. The Mavs, speaking of Dwight, the Mavs decided to employ the Hacker Dwight, Hacker Howard, in the fourth quarter in an effort to try and get themselves back in the game. But it kind of backfired a bit. Dwight ended up shooting 4 of 6 in that stretch. And then Carlisle was quick to call off. You know, in total, Dwight shot 7 of 9 from the free throw line. That was really good to see, just to see him step up and hit those on the road as well. I want to throw that out there that was really good as well, because obviously that's where the most hostile, the most distracting circumstances are for shooting a free throw, especially if you're someone like Dwight, who's obviously going to get jeered and booed at the line and that kind of thing. So it's good to see him really knock those down on the road, especially against a team where I'm sure he's been rumored to head a few times in his career, like sign as a free agent. So it's good to see him knock those down. Yeah, the Hawks won all four quarters, which I believe is the first time since November that was the case. So outscoring the Mavs 22-20 in the first quarter, 23-22 in the second quarter. Getting it done defensively, which is the focus of my recap after the game. 21-17 in the third and 31-23 in the fourth. Big discrepancy at the free throw line. The Hawks shot 26 of 32. The Mavs shot 9 of 10. Big difference there. Good turnover game. Only 10 turnovers for the Hawks. That's good. Hawks have been hard to watch with turnovers at times this year. It has gone much better as the season's gone on. And that was another good game from that last night. And then finally, they shot 11 of 22 from the three-point line, 50% from, yeah, so 50% from three. So that's really the all the talk for the games. I kind of missed, in the Nets game, I kind of missed talking about Dwight Howard's dab on a handshake slash dab on Jeremy Lin, which you should definitely check the footage for. Gonna skip on the kind of inform, out of form segment this week, mainly just because there were only two games on. But I do want to focus on Dennis Schroeder for a little bit, because he has improved so much this season as the season has gone on. Let me just give you his splits from the last 20 games. So over the last 20 games, Schroeder is averaging 20 points per game, 50% shooting from the field, 40% shooting from three, 7 assists per game, 3 rebounds per game, 2.9 turnovers per game, and 1 steal. That's over his last 20 games. I'm not going to lie, I rag on Dennis a good bit because I don't really enjoy watching him play. I don't like his play style. But he has really matured as this season has gone along. He's kind of understood where to take his shots much better than he did at the beginning of the season. The erratic decisions that he's made have definitely been cut down. The sheer amount of questionable shots that he's taken, they've also been reduced greatly as well. He just looks really good out there. And you can argue he's having a better season than Jeff Teague is in Indiana. I know he's faring a little bit better with Monte Ellis out of the lineup now. But yeah, Dennis, you know, I give him a lot of crap, but you know what? I give him the respect he deserves. And especially when he does well, I always point it out. You know, it's like, I always point out, you know, I give him a lot of crap, but he does this. So, you know, credit to Schroeder. Big improvement. Maybe if he does this from next season on, like if for a full season, could be in good, well, I was going to say he could be in contention for an all-star game, but there's just a plethora of point guards that are way ahead of him in the bat, not pecking order. So maybe not, but he's playing really well. And he's played very well over a very decent stretch as well. So there's no reason to believe why this shouldn't continue. The 40% shooting from three is massive, though. That's something I certainly wasn't expecting. To go along with the zero turnover game, 10 assist game against the Nets. All right, we're getting close to wrapping up here. Just looking at the schedule next week for the Hawks. They're in action tonight, which is Friday. In action against the Celtics tonight at home. It's the return of Al Horford. We'll get to that in a sec. Then they travel to New York on Sunday for a 1 p.m. game at Madison Square Garden. I'm sure the Hawks will be out for some revenge. The Knicks are in a complete funk right now. Good Lord. Mellow ejections. TJ McConnell buzzer beaters. Oh, man. It's just bad. Derrick Rose going missing. Oh, my goodness. Going AWOL. Jeannie Mack. It's not a good time for the Knicks. So maybe the Hawks can take advantage there. And then Wednesday, heading into Detroit for a match against the Pistons on Wednesday there before being back for another game in Atlanta on Friday. I believe against the Wizards, but we'll be talking about that next week because, well, we'll have recorded this before then. So just about that Boston game, obviously it's big because this is Al Horford's first visit to Atlanta since he left as a free agent in the summer. You know, he obviously spent nine seasons with the Hawks. All-Star games, yeah. The dude did a lot. He had a big impact in Atlanta. I'll just give you some of his stats from the season because maybe some of you aren't tracking them. I know I wasn't for a while anyways. But here's Horford's splits from the season so far. 15.3 points per game. 6.9 rebounds a game, that's a career low. 4.9 assists a game, that's a career high. 1.9 blocks, a career low, 45.6% field goal shooting, and 33.8% three-point shooting. The 6.9 rebounds is confusing to me. Horford, you know, he's not the greatest rebounder, but he's not that bad. You know, he should be grabbing at least 7 or 8 rebounds a game. Well, I know technically 6.9 is 7, but maybe I'll say 8 rebounds a game he should be grabbing. Obviously, Boston is not a very good rebounding team. They're the third worst rebounding team in the league with 41.1 per game. I guess just for comparison, the Hawks are ranked 12th with 44.4. So, yeah, that's a little surprising. The field goal percentage also is surprising because Horford's been usually a pretty efficient player at his position, you know, shooting like 50% and the such. So that's a little surprising. It'll be interesting to see what their reaction to him is on Friday. I'll expect there to be some boos because obviously the Celtics and Hawks rivalry runs deep, especially given the playoffs last year. And even though the Hawks won, there was still a bit of beef there. I believe the Hawks will have a video tribute, which good. come on, like unlike OKC with Serge Ibaka, come on, you gotta step up a bit better there. I hope he's not booed. I hope he's not booed because, you know, at the end of the day, it was more okay in the end. Okay, obviously he made the decision to leave. He could have taken less money if he wanted to really stay. But it was the Hawks that lowballed him and didn't give him the respect that he felt he deserved and focused in other areas before him, their main free agent, of course. So I can understand why he left, but the common fan won't. So I think there will be some boos, but I think Horford has been quoted saying, "Let's pull up, shall we? Let's show how unprepared we are or how quickly our computer goes to sleep. Let's pull up that Horford quote. Okay, so Viv Lemore writes that Horford has not thought about the reception he will receive from the Hawks fans. But he did say this, "I have so much love for the Hawks fans. They really embraced me from the very first day I got here. I spent some good years there. Regardless of what the reception is, I'm always grateful to them." And that's nice. I think he expects to be jeered a little bit as well. So it'll be interesting to see what the reception is for him. I'd recommend checking out that article from Chris Vivlemore of the AJC. Horford here in the Celtics uniform will be weird. Some really good quotes. Let me just read some just from Mike Budenholzer. "Al has such a presence. For him to welcome me and welcome a different style of playing, a different system, I'm very grateful to him. When your best players are buying in and willing to do anything that the coach, in this case me, is asking, everyone else tends to fall into line. He was one of those guys who helped us establish a culture, the way of playing. He's moved on. We moved on, I think, with a ton of respect for each other." And finally from Millsap, "As a fan of basketball, it's weird to see Al Horford in the Celtics jersey." And I think that'll be very evident tonight. It will be strange to see him in Boston green. But just those quotes from Bud, I think Bud would have loved to have kept Horford. Obviously, we don't really know for certain what exactly happened and where, what actually happened in those meetings and why it was made the decision to bring in Dwight first rather than sign Al Horford. Again, maybe it's to do with that ownership. But that's a story for another day. The fact is, he's gone, and now he's in Boston green. And the Hawks are in green tonight as well, now that I mention it. High Voltage Friday? Is that the night they're calling it? They're basically wearing those blue and green jerseys from when Pete Maravich played. So maybe the Celtics will be in white actually tonight, which would be weird in to another road team in their home jerseys on the road. But I guess they'll have to, because green and blue will definitely clash. Maybe they'll wear black. Who knows? It's going to be a really interesting game. I'm really looking forward to it. I think the Hawks will be well up for it. I think Millsap will be. I think Dwight especially. Because at the end of the day, this is the guy that everyone is kind of comparing him to with the Hawks. If you get me from that sense. And this is the guy like, oh, we're better off with... You know, you always have those hecklers that will say that the Hawks are better off at Horford and over Howard. And, you know... There's debates for and against. We're not here to discuss those. But I think Dwight will come out and he'll want to have a really good game tonight. And I think with how he rebounds and how the Celtics rebound, we could be on for a very, very decent Dwight line tonight. So that'll be interesting to see. Of course, the Schroeder Isaiah Thomas rivalry continues. Obviously, those two had some beef in the playoffs. Isaiah getting the benefit of the doubt, of course, by getting away with without a suspension. Like, he closed his fist and smacked Schroeder with it. And of course, then at game six, I think he lip read him saying, "I'll see you out the back." It's like, yeah, whatever. So that is that rivalry will be fun to watch tonight. Be interesting to see Al Horford on that side of things. If those two get into it, seeing Horford kind of in the middle there would be interesting. I believe Avery Bradley didn't travel to Boston. I think Kelly Olynyk is another one that didn't travel. But the big one, obviously, is Bradley. That's unfortunate for the Celtics because he's he could be their leading rebounder. If not, he's right up there. He definitely has more than, he averages more than Al Horford does a game, which is, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know how Celtics fans should feel about that. And that's going to do it for this week in the Hawks. Got those three games. Obviously, the big one tonight against Al Horford and his return to Atlanta. Thank you very much for listening. Somehow you made through. No additional BS this week with Wes Wilcox news. Other than I think he was disciplined internally by the Hawks. So for his insensitive comments, shall we say. You can find that story on Deadspin. I don't want to go into it again. Anyways, thanks very much for listening. Hope you have a great day, and we will see you next time.